approximated the federal stimulus. So the aggregate fiscal expenditure stimulus was flat. There was no stimulus. That's according to a study, recent study by the National Bureau of Economic Research, the standard source of economic information. Well, the center's clearly not holding, and those who are harmed are once again shooting themselves in the foot. The immediate consequence in Massachusetts was to provide another vote to block the appointment of a pro-union voice at the National Labor Relations Board, which has been virtually defunct since Reagan's successful war against working people. Well, that's what can be expected in the absence of constructive alternatives. Well, are there constructive alternatives? Take a look at the industrial heartland in Ohio, where General Motors, among others, continues to close plants. There's one of the few journalists in the United States who pays any attention to labor issues, Louis Uchitel of the New York Times. He reported recently from the scene of one recently closed plant. He writes that President Obama never sought to reopen the factory, even after the federal government became controlling shareholder in GM during the auto bailout so they could do what they wanted. What Obama has done instead is to try to ease some of the pain by sending an ambassador as a salve for the community's wounds, offering hope, you remember that, and aid. The aid is suggestions which can't be implemented. And meanwhile, there's another ambassador who he doesn't mention, the Secretary of Transportation, Roy LaHood, and that other ambassador is in Spain. He's offering federal stimulus money to Spanish firms to produce the high-speed rail facilities that the U.S. badly needs and that could surely be produced by the highly skilled workforce that's reduced to penury in Ohio while Obama shuts down the factories. That's Joe Stack's experience in Harrisburg again. In 1999, LaHood, who was then a Republican congressman, introduced a bill that would have provided federal funding for transportation infrastructure. It would have authorized the Treasury to provide $72 billion a year in interest-free loans to state and local governments for capital investments. That includes investments in transportation and transportation infrastructure. And interestingly, his bill called for not borrowing the money, but using U.S. notes. That's much as Abraham Lincoln did to finance the Civil War and as FDR did during the Great Depression. Well, that was 1999. Today, LaHood is using federal stimulus money to obtain contracts in Spain for the same purpose. It's another sign of how the center has been disappearing in recent years, the past 30 years. Well, the radical imagination should suggest an answer. The factory in question and many others could be taken over by the workforce with the support of that would, of course, require the support of the communities that are left desolate and, in fact, the rest of us. And they could be converted to production of high-speed rail facilities and other badly needed goods. Now, I said radical imagination, but the idea is not particularly radical. In the 19th century, it was intuitively obvious to New England workers, quoting their papers, that those who work in the mills should own them. And the idea that wage labor differed from slavery only in that it was temporary, it was so common that it was even a slogan of Lincoln's Republican Party. Well, during the recent years of financialization and deindustrialization, there have been repeated efforts to implement worker and community takeover of closing plants. Few have succeeded, but not most. The ideas have immediate moral appeal to the affected workforce and the communities, and they should be quite feasible with sufficient public support, and they would be very far-reaching in their implications. Well, for the radical imagination to be rekindled and to lead the way out of this desert, what is needed is people who will work to sweep away the mists of carefully contrived delusion, reveal the stark reality, and also to be directly engaged in popular struggles that they sometimes help galvanize. So what is needed, in short, is the late Howard Zinn. Terrible loss. Well, there won't be another Howard Zinn, but we can take to heart his praise for the countless small actions of unknown people that lie at the roots of the great moments of history, the countless Joe Stacks who were destroying themselves and maybe the world when they could be leading the way to a better future. Thanks.
MIT professor, author, activist Noam Chomsky, world-renowned linguist and political dissident, speaking at Pace University in New York on March 21st, addressing more than 1,000 people at the Left Forum. If you'd like a copy of today's broadcast, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Aaron Mate, Anjali Kamat, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Mike DeFilippo, Peter Curries, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Samantha Chambly, Jessel Noor, Vesta Goodars. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Coming up next, it's More Talk Radio with guest host Maggie Starr and Lucio Luna. They'll speak with community activist Malik Rahim about the British Petroleum oil spill and the crisis in the Gulf.
The oil slick is threatening hundreds of species of fish, birds, and other wildlife along the Gulf Coast, one of the world's richest seafood grounds.
If you don't find some levity in this, man, it will break your stinking heart because, you know, we grew up down here.
What they do is they make hair mats and hair booms. And the hair mat, it's made out of human hair or animal hair. And you can reuse the mat like 100 times and it soaks up oil.
Right now, at this very moment, huge amounts of oil are gushing into the Gulf of Mexico. The massive, ongoing oil disaster has led people across the country to question our nation's dependence on oil to fuel our economy and lifestyles. KBOO Radio will present an all-day special on Monday, June 7th, on the BP oil disaster currently wrecking the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf Coast, and beyond. During this special program, we'll look into the causes and potential impact of the spill and look at ways to hold multinational oil companies accountable and to redirect our nation's resources towards stopping and reversing climate change. We'll have volunteer barbers in the studio cutting hair to help create hair rugs that can soak up spilled oil in the Gulf. We encourage your participation in this effort from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Monday, June 7th on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM.
We need to kick our addiction to fossil fuels and really create a clean energy economy.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of City Repair's 10th Annual Village Building Convergence. This year, the VBC will be taking place from May 28th till June 6th in various locations throughout Portland. Everyone is welcome to participate at one of the 31 community placemaking sites. Learn about Cobb and natural building, permaculture, public art, and more. In the evening, there will be speakers and music at St. David Church. For more info, kboo.fm/VBC10.
Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to More Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Maggie Starr.
And I'm Lucio Luna.
We are guest hosting More Talk Radio this morning. Cecil Carey and Celeste Prescott are away. Today, we'll be joined from New Orleans by veteran activist Malik Rahim. Malik is a former Black Panther, and in the destruction after Hurricane Katrina, he co-founded Common Ground Relief to help the New Orleans citizens who were abandoned in the wake of the storm. Common Ground Relief provided housing, food, and medicine and services to the population. Since then, he's been a community organizer, and in 2008, he ran for the U.S. House of Representatives on the Green Party ticket in Louisiana. And Malik's experience in disaster response and community organizing are all too relevant in the Gulf of Mexico right now, as oil continues to spill out of a leaking BP oil well. Over the weekend, BP abandoned its plan of plugging the well from above, saying that after trying for days, it was not working. Next, they're going back to trying to lower a cap over the leaking well, which they tried weeks ago without success. But as government and corporate efforts falter, there is a growing community response to the spill. Hair of people and animals is being collected by a nonprofit called Matter of Trust and used to form hair booms and hair mats that can soak up oil from the water. One of the places that hair is being collected for that group is at the Meg Perry Center for Environmental Peace and Justice, run by Common Ground. We can see that a strong community response is necessary, and that's why we are so pleased to have Malik Rahim with us today to talk about community organizing in the wake of disaster. Malik Rahim, welcome to the program.
It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you so much for joining us. And this is, of course, the second major disaster to strike New Orleans in recent memory, and it was in the wake of Katrina that you co-founded Common Grounds. Could you tell us a little bit about how you identify the community needs in the wake of that disaster and put together and organize the community to respond to them?
Okay, well, first of all, I just would like to correct you. This is not the second. This is the fifth disaster to hit this area since Katrina. We was hit by Katrina, then Rita, then Gustav, and then Ike. So, and now this BP oil spill, along with something that most people have failed to recognize, and that is Nashville also was just flooded. That flood water, like the waters of Katrina, turned toxic, and now it's flowing down here from the, you know, through the Mississippi. So this is an area that is probably the most toxic area now in America, or probably in the world. Or one of the most toxic in the world. But it's, you know, I hate to say it like this, and I might offend many of your listeners. But this was something that was long in the making and well overdue. You know, we have allowed the petroleum industry to create the same type of environmental disasters all over the world, in the wake of wherever they've been. They have left it in a toxic mess. Now it's our chickens coming home to roost. You know, I mean, we are now faced with it, with the rest of the world have gone through. It wasn't no outcry about what a Chevron done in the Amazon. It wasn't no outcry what Shell was doing in Nigeria, you know. So now it's here. But this is something that many environmentalists have been saying for over the last 20 years that this was going to happen. They was talking about all the many times that they have drilled and how successful they have been. But it only took one to turn into an environmental disaster. And that's what people need to understand. We have to put safeguards on any type of drilling, any kind of way we disturb nature. We have to make sure that we have to safeguard to return it back into the state that it was once in.
Have you seen a large outpouring of community response to this disaster?
Well, Well, in the bayous where they're most impacted by, oh, yes. But people really don't have any organized plan on what type of action to do. You know, any person whose way of life is about to be destroyed, you know, the anxiety comes natural. You know, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a 300-year way of life as we know it, as recorded by our history in America, over a 300-year way of life is about to end, about to be significantly altered. And the anxiety is there. You know, I mean, you have fishermen that now don't know if they could pass down that legacy to their children. You have individuals that that just went through like in Cocotree and Punishy and Dulac and then Venice and these areas. And I'm just talking about in Louisiana. I'm not even talking about right now Mississippi and Alabama, you know, and Florida. Just in Louisiana, you have these people who have been hit by Katrina, then Rita, then Gustav, then Ike. And every time that they're just about ready to recover, here come another disaster.
Have you heard anything about, I heard that the government was trying to prevent people from going to places to do cleanup without a clearance. Have you heard anything about this?
Oh, yes. Listen, I was definitely denied interest in those areas. And at Common Ground, as a relief organization, you know, we have now served over 500,000 people, but we are still not recognized as a relief organization. So we wasn't allowed back in Venice. And I thought it was just me personally as being an African-American that's not from there. But then Madea Benjamin from Cold Pink and Global Exchange, she tried to go there just last week and was met with the same type of stoppage that I was. She was turned around and sent back to New Orleans. So, yes, it is definitely going. And I truly believe if the activist community would have been allowed to come up in there, those who needed to be establishing that first line of defense, then right now we wouldn't have been in this shameful situation that we are facing now.
It does seem, surely, firsthand you've been seeing a pattern where, in addition to having an ineffective response itself, the government actually seems to thwart community efforts to respond to these disasters.
Oh, yes, because right now everything is what BP wants to do. It's not with the state or the local parishes, left on the activist community. You know, it's everything is based upon what BP wants to do. And I'm not saying that BP is totally wrong, but what I am saying is that we, as a society, is totally wrong. That we need to be right now working on coming up with the safeguard. Every university in America should be right now working with LSU on every university. Take that back. Every university globally that have an environmental department need to be right now partnering with LSU in order to come up with some means that we can restore the wetlands after this oil spill is capped. You know, I mean, at Common Ground, our wetland restoration program started shortly after we was allowed to go and see the devastation of our wetlands. We have done probably more, participated in more wetland plantings of indigenous plants than any other organization since the hurricane. We have right now maybe 2,000 indigenous trees that we are growing to place back into our wetlands. And never have we been notified about doing anything or our assistance and dealing with this disaster. And we have to place politics on the side. Politics have no room in a disaster. When it do, it becomes totally to the right and become far the way it was in New Orleans. And I never want to experience 4 days of fascism again. And that's what happened here when we allow politics to be the determining factor on who received what in the aftermath of a disaster of Katrina.
Politics in disaster relief is our topic, and you are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. I'm Maggie Starr, and co-host Lucio Luna and I are talking with Malik Rahim right now. He co-founded Common Ground Relief in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and we're talking about the Gulf Coast disaster right now. If you would like to join in this conversation, you can call 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. If you have a question for Malik Rahim or have something to add to our conversation. So that is the number. Malik Rahim, again, thank you for joining us. And I am right with you as you are talking about politics having too much of a role in disaster relief. I'm wondering, as you and fellow activists in New Orleans have responded to so many hurricanes and disasters, what have you been learning over the years practically about how best to, I don't know whether to say work with or combat the government response to the disasters in order to get community needs met?
Well, I'll tell you right now, we are learned and capable of providing services for up to 500 families. And I'm talking about the average family size of one adult and three kids. So we are talking about 2,000 people, roughly 2,000 people. And we are capable of providing that service right now after a disaster. And that's without any assistance from the federal, state, or local government. We have. We also know that within 6 hours, given the opportunities and the resources, that we can have a functioning community established after any disaster. You know, and I'm not just talking about here in New Orleans or in Louisiana and dealing with hurricanes, because we sent the delegation for Common Ground Collective also went to San Diego after the firestorm. You know, we also went to Atlanta, you know, after the flooding. And up in Vermont, there's been Common Ground volunteers. In Haiti, right now, I can't even count the number of common grounders and former common grounders that have been over to Haiti and to Chile. So, again, we have a wealth of knowledge. You know, that's the reason why we founded the Meg Perry Center for Environmental Peace and Justice, so we could have a nucleus for this knowledge, for this wealth of information that we have and experience that we have obtained over the last 4.5 years. So that we can make sure, because see, never again, you know, we can always be faced with disasters, always, but never again should ever a disaster have to turn to a tragedy due to our failed action.
Once again, we are speaking with Malik Rahim, and the phone number to call in if you want to ask Malik Rahim a question is 503-231-8187. I have been feeling just so devastated myself by this disaster and how, as an environmentalist and an activist, how we've failed to keep these things in check. And the thing I'm noticing the most, not just the hurricane disasters, but the financial crises, the bad mortgages, the corruption, all the corporate criminals running around, just getting rewarded for their bad behavior. I'm wondering if you have seen a consciousness evolving in the people around your community about what to do with the, all these different corporations and how they're ruling our local lives. And we know best how to serve our communities. I've been firsthand at disasters, and people can take care of themselves. What do you see? People, any difference in their viewpoint on who's the real criminal here?
I'm going to tell you. What you find here is that there's a loss of conscience in many communities of what is truly happened because of the fact they're still in recovery. In the aftermath of Katrina, we allow politics to cause us to tear down or to demolish four major housing projects. Fisher, William Fisher, the St. Bernard Housing Development, the old Magnolia and the old Calio project. But when we displace it, and yes, granted, that they are building back some beautiful apartments. But what it have done, it have left a community that has came back without no assistance and have taken it that I got to make it by any means necessary, you know, because nobody going to help me. And now we are in a drug war. We're in a war that has been perpetuated by greed and that have now claimed the lives of and violently claimed the lives of well over 2,000 people since this hurricane. And no one have addressed it. We have gotten to the degree that we blame our kids instead of trying to assist them. You know, I mean, there was no trauma counselors here, you know. People had to cope with with the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina by their own means in whatever way that they could. Some went back to using drugs. Some kids started to smoke marijuana. And with just these little simple things that could have been in place, because we at Common Ground at one time had 40 beds for recovery for addicts. But then instead of supporting us, they closed us down. You know, so you have this mechanism in here. And as for the outcry in defense of public housing, I dare to say that no other organization has stood fast for the residents of public housing since Hurricane Katrina than Common Ground. I know I might be sounding that is badging about the accomplishments of Common Ground, but I am honored to see what we have accomplished. If it wasn't for young white volunteers who came down here in the aftermath of Katrina, when our government had quarantined African Americans inside a disaster, if it wasn't for those volunteers, God knows if our community would still be in existence, because they're the ones who's crossed those lines and said, no, we're going to see what's going on. And when they came, they were so appalled that they went back and got supplies and steady came to help. One of the individuals is a part of your organization. I mean, part of your station. I cannot say what Common Ground would have been if it wasn't for Jenkins and her stand for peace and justice. So, again, we agree with in this. The outcry of these police that is now being found, who are now about to be indicted, and those who have pleaded guilty to the murders and atrocities that they committed.
Speaking of those officers, what's the development on that? Is there any change happening because of this in the police department, or do you see it just being another, whitewash?
Well, I'm going to tell you with it, I try to, and this is just my personal feeling, it's because we have been saying that this has been happening from the onset. You know, I mean, I have been speaking out about these murders for now 4.5 years, you know, and nobody wanted to hear it except for the progressive stations like yours and others. But as for the mainstream, and all those organizations, no one wanted to hear this. You know, it's not like the NAA wasn't informed of these murders 4.5 years ago, or the Nation of Islam, you dig, 4.5 years ago, or the Urban League, in which I was former mayor, you know, is the head of. You know, it wasn't like that. They wasn't informed that these atrocities was happening to young African-American males. You know, it wasn't like that the hip-hop community and your rap community wasn't informed of what's going on. It wasn't like the rest of the African-American communities wasn't informed. It wasn't like the rest of America wasn't informed of these atrocities. But no one had the courage to come up and say that, hey, this has to stop. So it went on and festered for 4.5 years, you know, until now in this cancerous form, you know, we are talking about addressing it.
We're talking
about now trying to bring some type of justice to an unjust situation, because I'm going to tell you, every time I look at Mrs. Glover, and I'm talking about Henry Glover's mother, you know, who have for 4 years, 4.5 years, you know, had to live with the fact that the police not only killed her son, you dig, but burned his remains. You know, never gave any closure. So there's a saying that justice delayed is justice denied. So, you know, I don't believe that it's time for us to talk about it. I believe everybody needs to be pulled to the table and say, why? Why didn't you speak out?
Well, hopefully we can have some discussions about this in the face of all these disasters. We're battling many similar issues in Portland with police violence, especially against non-white citizens and people living here. We enjoy quite a progressive community, but there's just so far to go. And what I'm getting from you is that you're in New Orleans. You don't feel that that community, that support happening down there.
Well, I didn't say in the world. I'm saying in America.
In America, yeah.
Because we cannot isolate this as being something that would just happen in New Orleans. It happened here with the same attitude, the same drunkenness. Because America as a whole, you know, we are a society that have been addicted. We are addicted to petroleum, so we are allowed it to do anything. And then we are drunken on prosperity. So we have an addiction, and we are in a drunken state. And it's time that we start waking up, that we start understanding that, because one thing, and I want to be very clear on this, so goes New Orleans, so goes America. And so goes America, so goes life as we know it on this planet. So again, we better try to get our act together now, or either if it's any future generation, they're going to be cursing us for our fail to act.
We're speaking with Malik Rahim, and if you want to join the conversation, you can call in. The phone number is 503-231-8187. I've had a few friends recently head down to New Orleans, and a few others that also recently left to go to Haiti to try and help rebuild. How do you feel like that's helpful right now? Would you like to see more people coming? And how would you like to see people react to this disaster? What would you like to see happen?
Well, the first thing I would like to see happen is that I get my passport. Because when I went to get my passport renewed and tried to go over to Haiti, I was denied. I was denied my passport. And the reason that was given is I was classified as a deadbeat dad. So
they find all kinds of ways to divide us, don't they?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, nobody took them in consideration that for the last 4.5 years I have spent my life on uh, on 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 organizing and trying to help people through common ground.
Do you feel that you've had any other pressure from government agencies or police for your activism?
Oh, you got to remember, we was founded with an agent and provocateur in our midst, Brandon Darby. You know, so we was founded in controversy. You know, I mean, how can you not be? You know, one of the things that I speak upon is COINTELPRO, a Katrina style, because it definitely happened here.
You're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. If you'd like to join the conversation this morning with Malik Rahim, co-founder of Common Ground in New Orleans, you can call us at 503-231-8187 and join in the conversation about New Orleans, Katrina, and what's going on in the Gulf right now with the BP oil disaster. Malik Rahim, we seem to be talking a lot about everything the government does to hinder activist groups, denying you your passport, shutting down public housing, quarantining African Americans in a disaster zone after Katrina. What role, if any, do you think the government should have in dealing with something like the BP oil crisis? Or do you think it should be mostly left to community groups to respond to their own needs?
I believe the very first thing that needs to happen is that we have to give more respect and honor those who are directly impacted by that disaster. It shouldn't be that right now the people of Punisher, the people of Dulac, the people of Cocotree and other areas that is right there on the bayou, it shouldn't be that they are denied every step of the way on trying to help themselves. You know, I mean, how silly do it seem if your house is on fire?
You know, oh, we have a caller.
In every attempt that you make to put out this fire, you are met with red tape.
Okay, we have a caller. Caller? Stephen, you have a question?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, Mr. Rahim, this is Steven. I'm not really originally from America. I am from Africa. But my question here is, we are seeing America from slavery up to today, that black people, African American, have always fought for their rights. And since Martin Luther King time, there have been some improvement, but what is your organization doing for the awareness of African American to seek further education so that these problems that you are outlining will not exist? From my view, I think when we have mass education towards obtaining terminal degrees in the black community, I think most of our problem will be resolved. I take my answer off the air.
Thank you for that question, Stephen.
Okay. One of the first things is you just look at the makeup of Common Ground. Over the last 4.5 years, we have had over 30,000 volunteers to come along and to work with us. And probably 95% of them have been white. So right there alone, we are breaking a barrier that have existed in the deep South. And in Louisiana, you can't get no deeper in the South than where we are now. So again, in the deep South, where traditionally the separation of race has been paramount. You know, I was born under Jim Crowism or apartheid America style. You know, so I've seen and felt the lash of racism. So I've never seen anything like what we have created at Common Ground, because under Common Ground here you have two African Americans, Sharon Johnson and myself, along with Scott Crow and a Judas, from the very beginning, an FBI informant and provocateur, Brandon Darby, you know, started one of the greatest organizations that ever exists in this country, and in spite of the government.
I would like to know your insight on how you dealt with the informant.
How did we deal with
him? How did you find him out, and what happened there?
He was found out because of the fact of how he went and tried to influence some young people to go to the Democratic convention, I mean, to the Republican convention, and do some type of violent stand.
So he was instigating young people.
That's what he was doing, and yeah, that's what he tried to do here. Because if it wasn't for Brandon Darby, I could tell you right now, when I stand before you and say that we have assisted a half a million people, we could have went on and said that we have assisted over a million people. You know, that our environmental program would have been a program that would still be going on. Those environmental scientists that he orchestrated them leaving Common Ground, that right now maybe a mechanism would have been in place that we could address this BPR spill. So, yes, I could tell you a story on just him. But to your listener, that's what we have been doing. We have been showing America that there are people here that whose conscience have been infected by Dr. King to the degree that they are making a commitment to environmental peace and justice. This center that I'm in right now, the Meg Perry Center for Environmental Peace and Justice, is dedicated to a young lady who came down here three times, two times to Common Ground, on a bus fueled by old cooking oil. Came down here, and when she seen the plight of what was going on, went back and got her friends to come down here to assist in the recovery effort here in this city. And when she died, and she tragically lost her life in a bus accident, down here, leaving New Orleans, heading to Houma to work with the Native American and the Cajun community. When she lost her life, the media here didn't describe her as a modern-day hero, didn't describe her as a volunteer who was coming down here assisting us in our recovery effort. The media here only described her as the death of a drifter. And for almost 4.5 years, that's what she was known as. It wasn't until Mitch Landrieu became mayor that a proclamation was given on the 19th of this month to her parents, declaring her an American hero. These are the people who have came down, the young volunteers who came down, and when we could not leave Algiers because we was quarantined in Algiers, they went and used their privilege as being white to make sure that we had supplies here, and doing this in spite of a Brandon Darby, in spite of this government effort to constantly close us down. Because right now, we are still, again, you know, we are not recognized as a relief organization. You know, I couldn't even get my passport.
We are speaking with Malik Rahim, co-founder of Common Ground in New Orleans. If you'd like to join the conversation about Katrina, the oil spill in the Gulf, and community responses to disaster, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Again, to join the conversation, 503-231-8187. And you were just telling us, Malik Rahim, about Meg Perry, the hero and volunteer who helped in the Katrina recovery, and named after her is the Meg Perry Center for Environmental Peace and Justice. I think sometimes the conversations about environmentalism and peace and justice or social justice kind of get separated into sort of two, like they're almost as if they're two different issues, but they're actually really closely connected. Could you talk about the work that Common Ground does to connect the issues of social justice and environmental justice?
Well, I'm going to tell you by starting off by just saying this. If we cannot breathe this air or drink this water, all social justice become mute. So there's nothing more important than saving our environment. Because only through saving our environment do we save life as we know it. You know, we've got to change our habits. We have to understand the importance of our carbon footprint. We need to understand that we can no longer be 5% of the world's population, causing maybe 30% of the world's pollution, using almost 30 a light number of the world's resources. We cannot continue this. That there are ways that we can change, I mean, that we can keep life as being as comfortable as anyone would want to live in a sustainable way. And we need to learn this. It needs to be increased. People need to understand this.
One would think in a disaster such as this that people could identify with workers and anybody living in the region could identify with how ruined the coast would be, that people could actually get together to clean it up and start change things. But I can only hope.
We can clean this up in maybe 2 or 3 years if a real campaign effort, in which we're planning on launching here at the Meg Perry Center. Because one of the things that Meg did, you know, when Meg was on her way to Dulac and when she was killed, she was going there to start a wetland restoration program, you know, because one of the things that we was able to obtain in our, and right now we're going to reprint it in our Meg Perry Healthy Soil pamphlet.
Well, we actually have a caller right now. We do have a caller. And Deanna, you're on the line.
Thank you. Hello, Malik. I'm calling to ask you what your suggestion, given all of your experience, would be for a person right now, anywhere in the United States, of course, but I'm calling from Portland area, and wanting to know what would be the very most helpful thing that we could do. Would it be to organize people around here to go there? Would it be something else?
All right. That's what I was about to get to, because I didn't want to end this without a plan of action and something that we can do. And listen, if every person that heard this message would take just 2 feet by 2 feet area and use it to plant and to grow just any form of the many indigenous plants that we are losing because of this petroleum, then we could start a recovery program as soon as we stop this oil spill and start going through it. Then other things we could do is the hair. Besides the hair, hay. Besides doing hay, cultivate oyster mushrooms and other mushrooms that we can plant and take out into these barrier islands and wetlands and start using to recover. Because the oyster mushroom is was a natural way of dealing with petroleum. So yes, these are the things that we can do. I am about to launch a cycling campaign. I'm gonna bike from here to Washington, D.C. Join me on my campaign. You know, help us to organize it. You know, because we plan on leaving on last Wednesday of this month, at least of next month. Join me on this. You know, contact your legislators.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Deanna, for that call. And if you have a question for Malik Rahim or want to join in this conversation, do give us a call at 503-231-8255. 8187. We are speaking this hour with Malik Rahim, who is a co-founder and helps run Common Ground Relief in New Orleans.
I was thinking about the hair project, and I want to donate my hair. I was feeling like, wow, wouldn't it be wonderful to see a bunch of bald people around, knowing that they all donated their hair to this, and how we could visually see other people supporting, feeling the way that we do. Is there any, for people who want to go down there and help, do you see that as beneficial, or do you see it as more taxing to resources? How?
No. It cannot help from being beneficial. It's because of the fact that volunteers came down here and not only worked, but witnessed what was happening here, that truth finally prevailing in the aftermath of Katrina. You know, so yes, you know, when people come down here, they're going to see something for themselves, something that nothing else, there's no way I can explain to you. There's no way I could get you to truly understand the situation that we are in, you know, unless you come down here and see it. But then when you do, you also see America's best. You'll see some of the strength that made this such a great nation. You'll see people that are saying that yes, we need help, but we are willing to work to restore our community. But don't let us restore it only to allow another petroleum company to destroy it again. Let's find ways that we can not only satisfy our need for petroleum, you know, or our need for energy. Let's look at how we can clean up this environment. Let this be a wake-up call. So now let's turn this lemon into real lemonade, into some real environmental lemonade, where we are talking about no longer will we allow greed to supersede our need for energy, that greed will supersede our need to destroy what some of the old majestic trees. Where y'all at in Portland and in California? You know, we have to find other means. Listen, I've seen the greatness of America, and the Lord has blessed me to see it from a privileged position. You know, right now in New Orleans, we still operate the only free health clinic in the city. In New Orleans, it is so much that we have seen, and I know what we're capable of doing, and I know that we are capable of cleaning up the aftermath of this disaster.
We are speaking this hour with Malik Rahim of Common Ground in New Orleans, and he's sharing suggestions about how you can help with the oil spill. Plant an indigenous tree, plant some oyster mushrooms, get down there, and help clean up and bear witness to this spill. If you've got a question for Malik or want to join in this conversation, the number is 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller right now, Vernon from Corvallis. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your question or your comment?
I want to thank KBOO for having Malik on the air. Malik has inspired me as much as anyone in America. He's a wonderful man, and I'm very much looking forward to bicycling with him this year. We're riding together to Washington, D.C., converging from all parts of the country, so we'll be in Washington, D.C. on World Car Free Day.
Great.
And I'm so excited to see Malik again. It'll be great to be together again.
I'm going to tell you, we have to do it.
Well, thanks for calling in to share that goodwill. Do you have a comment on disaster relief, the situation in the Gulf? Do you have plans to help out aside from this bike tour?
Well, I am boycotting not just BP, but all big oil. I think we've got to learn to live our lives without the companies that exploit. There are many corporations that simply have shown that they do not have any real interest in human need, and we have to learn to live our lives in a way that doesn't depend on those corporations, and instead that allows us to help each other out in perfectly natural human ways. And that's the spirit that I've seen in New Orleans.
Yeah, that is a great comment to bring into this conversation. Malik Rahim, what do you have to say about that theme of living our lives without corporations? What experiences have you had with that? Does it there are so many, they are so big, but how can we live our lives without corporate influence?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I don't think we can live our lives without corporations, but I don't think it has to be corporations that is motivated by greed. Corporations, if you just break down to the root meaning of it, it only means working together. So we have to cooperate with each other, you know, but we cannot allow those who have defined us because of our drunken state to make us think that coming together is a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing. We are a human species that is socially connected. So, again, we have to come together. We have to cooperate. But we don't have to cooperate to destroy life as we know it. We don't have to cooperate to perpetuate racism or classism or sexism. We don't have to cooperate in order to say that we are all children of the God of Abraham, but then we are, because I'm a Muslim or I'm a Christian or I'm a Jew, you think that we cannot work together and we cannot cooperate if we won't say that we don't have the only good works of this world or of this spiritual world. So we have to cooperate in many ways, but we can come together. We can find that common ground that can bind us. We can understand that the one thing that unites us is we all need to breathe this air. We all need to drink this water. And only by preserving this can we also preserve life as we know it. Because I'm going to tell you that no one could have told me when I was a child that one day people would be buying a bottle of water, you know. And I prayed because I was watching this little thing on that CNN is about to do on toxic America. And I pray that doesn't come to fruition. But I know what? If we continue on a path that we are in, most likely our kids will be cursing us because of it.
We have another caller.
Was always waged against two wars, those who stood for the preservation of the wetlands and those who allow the petroleum industry to dominate it.
Malik Rahim, we have another caller calling in.
If it wasn't for the petroleum industry.
Caller, what's your name?
Corporations have took this toll.
Okay, caller?
Yes.
Who is this we're talking to?
My name is Abdel Hafib. I'm out of Portland, Oregon.
Okay, what's your question?
I just want to thank the brother Malik Rahim for pretty much doing the things that he's doing out there inside the side of America that he's on, and just acknowledge that, you know, it's just actually inspiring to hear someone as passionate and as educated regarding the issue, but not just educated, but also active and willing to inspire other people to be active. And just want to make the comment regarding the relation that was made regarding disasters to just corporate criminals and the different things that's happening. When it comes down to preventive medicines or just being prepared for what can happen, we know the United States of America has more debt than anybody in the world when it comes to corporate global relations in the world. You know, our economy is very fragile, and when it comes to being sustained and being able to take care of, as you mentioned, 2,000 families, like, that's crucial, and that's a crucial lesson, because at any given time we can be in a situation where we need to take care of ourselves, not just because of natural disasters, but because of negligence and corruption. So I just want to kind of like just, you know, salute the brother and whoever's working with him, and just let other listeners know, man, be inspired. Don't be afraid to be inspired and to be willing to get active any way that you can. First, beginning with education. I was just driving, heading to work, so I had to, like, hold on.
thank you for calling.
Yeah. thank you for calling and for sharing that. That is a good thought to begin wrapping up our hour of conversation. But Malik Rahim, is there a final thought that you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
That there's no noble human endeavor that's saving life as we know it. Let's unite. Let's come together. Let's put our petty differences on the side. Let's work to save this planet. And we can do it. We can do it. Let the future generations look at us as the generation of environmental peace. Let's come together. Let's develop the mechanism that is needed to make sure future generations can enjoy life as we did.
I have to concur with that last caller. I've really been inspired by talking with you today. I really appreciate your perspective being down there and all the work you do, all the gardens you guys are making, all of the people you're getting together. And we have to wrap up the program. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us.
And thanks so much to everyone who called in today.
Appreciate you all sharing your questions and keeping the conversation going. We have been speaking this hour on More Talk Radio on KBOO with Malik Rahim of Common Ground Relief in New Orleans.
And KBOO will be having haircutting for the relief, and there will be an in-house beautician on next Monday to cut your hair if you want to come in and donate your hair.
Next Monday will be an all-day special with programming focusing on the BP oil disaster in the Gulf, and we hope that you'll tune in anytime next Monday to learn more about that issue and how you can help.
This has been Talk Radio. I'm Lucio Luna.
And I'm Maggie Starr. Thanks for listening.